Okay, we're beginning here, five lines down on the top of Kaf Tedem and Aleph. The Gemara is continuing to give medical advice over here. Tana banana mikiz dam, someone who has bloodletting done, lo yochal chagbash, should not eat the following items, lo chalav, not milk, velo gvinal, not cheese, velo betzalim, and not onions, velo shechlaim, which are either pepperwort or cress. Imachal, if he does eat them, amar abayi, naite revieta dechalo, Reviat de chamra, bring reviat of vinegar, reviat of wine, vin arvinho behade adodi, and then you should mix them together, vinishte, and then drink it. Vichi mifaneh. And when he goes to defecate, lo mifaneh el mizracha shel ir, you should do it on the eastern side of the city, mishum de kasherecha, because whatever he expels from his body is going to be putrid or have a malodorous smell to it. And so he should do it on the eastern side of the city. That's based on what the Gemara says in Baba Batra, that when you want to set up a burski, you want to set up a area for tanning, for working the hides, you should do it on the eastern side of the city because the wind there is the lightest and it doesn't blow into the city and it'll keep the smell away from the city. And so that's why you should relieve himself on the eastern side of the city. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Malin Unkeli v'Shabbat. So one is allowed to raise or to take care of an Unkeli on Shabbat. My Unkeli. What is this Unkeli that he's speaking about? Amar Rabbi Abba, Istomka Deliba. Now here there are a number of different interpretations about it. Just embedded in the world, Istomka is stomach. And then you have Deliba is the heart. Others say that it is the tonsils or the opening of the stomach. But if you look in Rashi, Rashi interprets it as Dofne Basar, Shemitachad Alev, Behu Tarpisha. It is the area of the Basar that's under the heart. And that is the Tarpisha, whether that means the fats or the arteries that are around the heart. Lishnach Rina, which Rashi favors, is Tnuch Shekeneged Alev, the cartilage that's opposite the heart, Shekorim Nivla, which is an area that's near the diaphragm. Sometimes it gets pressed inwards, and it makes it laborious to breathe. What he's speaking about is the cartilage between the ribs, and if there's some injury or impact on the ribs, sometimes that cartilage or the ribs push inward, and they put pressure on the diaphragm. So that's what makes it difficult to breathe, and that's what Rashi says is being discussed over here, is this istomka deliba, this cartilage that's near the heart, that makes it hard to breathe because of the diaphragm being impeded. Maya Sutta, what is the solution to this problem? Maita Kimona Kruya. So I'm reading it like Rashi. Rashi over here says that Kruya is an adjective that is modifying the Kimona. The Kimona is the cumin. And Kruya means Ke'en Kaf High Growth. Fistful of cumin. On the other hand, if you look in the Bach, where in Otei, he separates out the items, Avala Oroch, Gores, Kruya, Vikimona. Nero Lefisa, Girsazu, Shekruya, Hu, Min, Esef. The Kruya is a totally separate item, and therefore it's not an adjective, but a separate item, which is caraway, Veninya, which is mint, Veagdana, which is wormwood, Sitari, which is Seturera, Veavadita, which is, Rashi says over here, is hyssop. So the liba, if you need this as a solution for the difficulty of the heart, which was the istomka, the liba that we saw before, using that for the medicinal advantage, bechamra, then you take this and mix it into wine and drink it. V'simaneich, and the way to remember that is, v'yayin yisamach lavav enosh. Wine brings joy to the hearts of man. So there you see that yayin is for the heart. Whenever you need this cure for something that's involved with the heart. And again, the different explanations that we saw before about istomka deliba, we saw three or four explanations. It all revolves around the heart. Then those items require to be mixed with wine in order to provide that benefit. Larucha, if it is a problem with that a person who has some sort of blisters or some sort of sickness, which is a derivative of being exposed to the wind, or difficulty breathing, has an evil shade or spirit in him. All these are different options. Rucha b'mayo, you put it into water. You take the same ingredients that we saw before and you mix them with water. B'simaneich, b'ruach elukim mirachefet al p'nei amayim. So the ruach is associated also with the shachefet that we saw in Rashi, but also the ruach, which is the problem over here, is associated with mayim. Therefore, you mix it with water. Likudo. The Rashi over here says that Kuda is Koli Shaisha Yuledet, Umitztanenet Alamashber. It's a sickness where the woman is feeling cold when she's on the birthing stone. And so that's what the kuda is. Others suggest that the kuda comes from excessive bleeding of the woman on the birthing stone. Or the other possibility here is that it also has to do with a ruach or a shade or something that comes upon the woman when she's about to give birth. Then you mix that with shichra, you mix that with beer, b'simaneich, b'chada al shichma. The pitcher was on her shoulder. So both from the fact that here it's dealing with a female, so it's a woman on the birthing stone, that's why it's kadal shichma. So as Rashi says, the word shichma has two letters that are found in sheikhar as well. And from that you remember that you mix the sheikhar in order to take care of the woman. Ravacha brei derava, shachik lu lekulu v'hadei adodi. Used to grind them all together. Shachik le melo chamesh etzbatei. Then he used to take a handful, grab it with all five fingers, and then take a piece and then either mix it with his drink that he was going to have. Vishati le, and then he would drink it. Ravashi shachik kol chad v'chad v'chudei. Ravashi used to grind each one independently. Vishakil melo etzbe'ei rabati, umelo etzbe'ei zutrati. He would take a pinch between his thumb and his pinky. He would take a pinch of each of these items and then mix them together in his drink. Amra Papa, Ana Avde the Kohani, Lo Yistai. I tried all of these remedies and none of them worked. Adar Amrali Hautayo, until I met up with this merchant. Aiti Kuza Chadato, he says, bring a new earthenware vessel. Mayo Mayo, fill it with water. Rami Bey Tarvado Dubsha, and put a spoon or a ladle full of honey into it, the taliba be kuchve, and then leave it overnight under the stars, this water, ulamachar ishte, and then in the morning you should drink it, avde hoche, vitzan, I drank that, and it brought around the solution I was looking for, it cured me from whatever ailment I had. Tanar banan, shisha dvarim mirapim et achole, michelyo, there are six things that actually help the person who is ill recover from this illness, urufuatan rifua, and they are efficacious in their curing. But not only that, they also bring strength. I mean that this is even good for healthy people. These are items that not only help those that are ill, maybe they're even preventative in nature because they keep you healthy. And these are the items. Kruv, cabbage, tradin, beets or spinach, u mesisin yvesha, and the waters of the dried pennyroyal, the kebat, and the stripe, which is the area of the stomach, the harat, and the womb, the yoteret hakaved, and then either that means the excess above the liver, or you can see here Rashi against tarfsha de kavdo, the tarfsha again, which is the diaphragm that is near the liver, yeshomim, after gimtanim, some people included in this list small fish. The small fish, not only are they curative in nature, but they also provide healthy benefits that they cause the body to grow in a healthy manner. There are 10 things that return someone who was ill back to his sickness. And when he returns, he's even worse than he was before. One who eats ox meat, shuman, fat, basar tzli, roasted meat, basar tzipurim, fowl, ubeitzat tzluya, roasted eggs, we're up to 5 now, vishichlaim, which is number 6, which is either cress or pepperwort, vitig lachat, getting a haircut or shaving, number 7, umerchatz is number 8, which we saw at the end of yesterday's daf, ugvina is number 9, vikaved and liver is number 10, vishomim afe gozim, others include also nuts, being detrimental, and other people include also kishuim, which either are gourds or melons. Tana de Rabbi Shmuel, lemani krashman kishuim. Why are they called kishuim, which would maybe even include cucumbers or zucchini? They're difficult for a person's body, for his physical being. They're like being punctured by the swords. That's why they're called kishuim, because they are kashim. They are bad or detrimental to the health of the individual. Right now we finish with the medicinal cures of the Gemara. Now we go back to our Mishnah. And in the Mishnah it says, Ein mistaprim mehem b'chol makom. You're not allowed to get a haircut from them in any location. Tanu Rabbanan. Yisrael mistaper me'oved kochavim ro'eb b'mar'ah ve'oved kochavim mister miso Kevin Shigil Borito Shumeta Diadol. So similar to our Mishnah, it gives both sides of the equation, which is what happens when the Jews get a haircut from the Oved Kochavim and vice versa. So when the Jew's getting a haircut from the Oved Kochavim, he's allowed to look in the mirror in order to protect himself. Looking in the mirror puts the barber on watch that the individual is watching what he's doing. So looking into the mirror gives you that advantage of being aware of what he's doing. The other way around, Israel was giving the haircut to the Oved Kochavim. They used to grow their hair out, the blurit, which is the equivalent of a almost like a mohawk with a ponytail in the back that they used to grow out for the Avodah Zarah. They used to grow out the front of their hair and the back of their hair and then cut the sides of their hair. And then once a year, they used to have a party, the Avodah Zarah, where they would cut their blurit, the shame of Avodah Zarah. That's what we saw earlier in the first parak about certain holidays for individuals, including the holiday of cutting one's hair. That was one of the holidays that was mentioned for individuals over there. So here a Jew who is cutting it has to stay away from the blurit, because if he leaves the blurit, then he's acknowledging this practice towards Avodah Zarah. Amar Maher, Yisrael mistaper mi'ovei kochavim ro'eh b'mara. Person who's getting a haircut from Ovi Kochavim, look in a mirror. Hey chidomi. What's the scenario? Iber shuter rabim lomeli mara. If it's in the Reshut Rabim, what do I need a mirror for? Because we said in the Mishnah already that if you do it in the public venue, then you have protection because people are watching, there are witnesses to the event. Ir Reshut Yachid, if he's in a private secluded area, Kiroem, my happy. If he's in private area, if he's looking at it, what does it make a difference? You see him kill you, or you don't see him kill you, it shouldn't make a difference. Olam Reshut Yachid. Because he has a mirror, he now gives himself a certain amount of import. Only people who were of a certain stature would look in the mirror and care how their hair was cut. A person who's so particular about how the barber cuts his hair must mean that they hold a certain political position or they have political connections. Otherwise, the common folk didn't care so much about how exactly their hair was cut or looked. Remember, it wasn't washed so often, and the hair was probably very matted and wasn't well kept or kempt in general. And therefore, the haircut was just to shorten the hair. It wasn't so much about style. Once you were already thinking about style, that meant you were already in the aristocracy. You were someone of a political position, and therefore, he's going to start worrying about the problem. He used to get his haircut on the paths of Narda, and Rashi over here says it was chutz le'ir. It was outside the city. Amalei chana chano. So the barber says to Rav Chana, Chana Chana, Yai Koech Mezuga, stretch out your neck for the scissors. He took that as like a saying he was going about to cut his neck. Amar Tetili, Davre Rabbi Meir. Says that it's coming to me because I violated the word of Rabbi Meir, which is Rabbi Meir doesn't let you get a haircut at all, irrespective of whether it's Beno the Beno, or whether it's in public. Chami make a distinction as to whether it's in public or in private, but Rabbi Meir makes no such distinction. He says, I'm deserving of this because I violated the word of Rabbi Meir. Gemara says, Rabbanan lo avar? Didn't he violate also the Rabbanan's position? Only said when it's Bishut Rabim that you're allowed to do it. So, Emar Domer Rabbanan Bishut Rabim, Bishut Yachid Mi Omur. Over here he's talking about the pathways that are outside the city of Narda. Because the paths outside of Narda were heavily trafficked, he thought even though it wasn't a real public thoroughfare, it was still considered as if he was in public, because there were enough passerbys to be a deterrence against this individual doing something untoward or killing him, because there would be witnesses to the event. What's interesting over here is the Balei HaTosafot. The Balei HaTosafot, the first one is really connected to our Mishnah, which he says, Avelo beno de beno. Chamim agree that you can't do it privately. Perish b'makom she'ein migalim b'nei adam kol kach. Says beno de beno doesn't literally mean you and him alone, because you and him alone is already captured by the yichud aspect. The Mishnah says you're not allowed to be miyachid with them because of shvichud damim. So that's already captured. So you can't say beno de beno means you guys alone. It has to mean you and a couple of people, or infrequent visitors that come there. She'en regilin b'nei adam kol kach, that people don't come there so often. So you actually have three different levels then, according to this. There's a level of being alone with them, which is clearly asur, nothing to do with the haircut, because of shvichut damim. There's another level, which is that you have secluded area where people are infrequently passing by. That is a problem, even according to the chachamim. Then you have an area where there's more active traffic. That's where the chachamim and Rabbi Meir will disagree. And Rechana Barbizna even indicates that it doesn't have to be literally a Rishut Rabim, just has to be an area where there's heavy traffic that will people will be passing by on a regular basis. The more important Tosafot is the next Tosafot. But Tosafot is Medayik from the Gemara over here, that there's something interesting about a mirror. He brings in the Tosefta from Paragimel, and he also brings a Yerushalmi that says that it's Mashma She'asur Le'ish L'ra'ot B'mar'ah. A man may not look in a mirror. V'nira ki'atam mishum lo yobash gever simlat isha. That a man should not act like a woman. Dimitargem lo yitaken gavra b'tikunei itata. A man shouldn't primp himself like a woman would do. He should not be so careful, oh, so caring about his appearance that he does that which women do. Which is that they look in the mirror and they check their hair, they check their appearance. That'd be something that Tosafot thinks, and Yerushalmi is pretty clear about it. Yerushalmi thinks that looking into a mirror for a man is maybe a violation of Lo Yibash Gever Simlat Isha. So now, he suggests over here that the Bavli is doing the same thing. The Bavli over here said that you can look in the mirror for protection purposes. You're allowed to take the mirror for the haircut because otherwise you're risking your life. Implied in that is that this was a dispensation to use the mirror in this instance, but not usually. Usually you couldn't be using a mirror. Here was a unique case because of the sakanat nefashot that was involved. Therefore, the Baal Tosafot wants to read the Yerushalmi now into the Bavli. That's not at all obvious. The Bavli itself never makes such an explicit statement or never even seemingly entertains this problem of looking into a mirror. But given the Yerushalmi, the Baal Tosafot over here want to interpret the Bavli and our Gemara over here in the context of that Yerushalmi, and say that looking into a mirror would be a violation of Lo Yubash Gever Simlat Isha. And he speaks about cases in the Bavli that we know of, that we've learned together. I'm not going to go through all the details from the Gemara in Shabbat, Gemara in Sotah, about certain dispensations that were given to Rabbi or to the Beit Nasi. And some of those dispensations seem to be focused on appearance and focused on certain types of activities that would otherwise be asur, including an individual or a man taking extra care in his appearance or extra care in how he appears to others. Those are exclusion over here. He says, Miu, Eino Asur, Kim Lit Naot. This is only restricted if he's doing it in order to beautify himself, Davar Mishum Lo Yubash Gever. Aval Histaper, Uli Galeach, Vilrot B'mara, Shalo Yichbol Batzmo, in order to shave, or in order to cut one's hair, and that you don't injure yourself, or you have something in your eye, and you want to clean your eye out, or you have an eye ache and need to see what it is. Vadai mutar. That is clearly mutar. So he differentiates between, we'll call it, misasel bisaro, which is the primping and beautifying oneself in the mirror, versus things that are practical, more necessary aside, where you can look in the mirror. Ubochein libot hu yodea. And he says, you can always claim that you're looking in there for some practical purpose and not to beautify yourself. He says, Hashem knows why a person's really looking in the mirror. Why are they so focused in looking in the mirror? He says that it's a sur to get a haircut from a Ovei Kochavim. Ela Inkein, you can see it, even if you're in the Rishut HaRabim. Become our Rav Chana. Because Rav Chana over here say, Tetali, Davre Adi Rabbi Meir, that it's coming to me because I violated the word of Rabbi Meir, and that means that he thought he did something wrong. Even though it was Bishut Rabim, nevertheless, he acknowledged doing something wrong, which would mean that we would have to worry, even Bishut Rabim, you have to worry about it. It says, Badafka Bitar, says that specifically when they cut the hair with a razor, the Shriach Behazeka Bekal. It's very easy to make that into a weapon and use that to kill the individual. So there, with scissors, it's not as common to be a problem. And therefore, shori im yeshimo acher. As long as there's someone else there that's watching and making sure that everything's going okay, then it's okay with scissors. It's interesting here because it's not at all clear, even in the time of the Rishonim, scissors were really made up of two razors that were put together in order to make them into a scissor. They didn't necessarily make scissors in the sense of like today, where we have separate scissors that have two different types of blades in them. In their day, the Gemara calls it a zuga, because it's a pair. It's a pair of blades that are put together. It's two razors that are put together. So it's interesting that Baal Tosafot makes such a distinction, because the scissor, in some senses, could act like a razor, if you use the side or the side that's very sharp. So it really depends on the sharpness of the blades of the scissor. But here it does make a distinction between scissors and razors. And obviously it's in a time where we worry about shpichut damim, and that will be qualified by all the qualifications that Rishonim have brought as to whether in today in modern society any of this applies because of the civil laws, the morality, and all the other things that govern the normal society today, where we don't find people acting this way, and we don't find that there's a free-for-all with regards to shpichut damim and other things, and then that would eliminate most of what is said here, as well as what the Baalei Tosafot said with regards to bloodletters and doctors about professionals, and if they're going to lose their professional license or their reputation, that's also impactful, and if you have the same thing by barbers who need to be licensed, then the same thing would be true there, which is that they're not willing to sacrifice their license or do something to hurt this individual if that's going to sacrifice their entire business. So because of those reasons, it probably is very likely different today. The only thing that might remain is the Baalei Tosafot's restriction against mirrors and the men using mirrors are spending too much time in front of the mirror. Ve'oved kochavim, ha-mistaper m'Yisrael, kevin shigit l'broyito shomet et yado. So here's the second half of the braita that we brought. And when he's cutting the oved kochavim, he's got a release when he gets to the blorit. V'kama, what's the distance he needs to leave between the part that he's allowed to cut and the blorit itself? Amrav Malkia, Amrav Adarbava, Shlosha etzbaot l'chol ruach v'ruach. Three etzbaot in every direction. Which means that he's got to leave at least 3 fingers breadth in every direction around the blorit where he doesn't get close to it. It's equivalent to what we do with borer on Shabbat. Like when you want to take out the bad and you take some good with it, then you're really not being borer because you're taking out the good with the bad and that's not borer. Same thing over here. If you leave behind shlosh etzbaot around the blorit, then you left stuff that you're allowed to cut and not allowed to cut. That means that you really haven't dealt with the blorit. You haven't been varer. You haven't segregated the blorit from what he needs to cut. And so that extra area that you leave makes that you really didn't leave the blorit. Not sure why the Ovi Kochavim would go to the Jew for a haircut then, because in the end, he doesn't get what he wants done. So it's interesting, I just noted as a side grammatically, that the Gemara uses shlosha here by etzbaot, even though in modern Hebrew it would be shalosh etzbaot. We find that sometimes in the Gemara and in the Rishonim themselves, that they will use words that today that we consider nekeva, they are very much focused on the hey at the end versus no hey at the end, and they'll make something zachar that we otherwise would make into nekeva. And that is actually in the language of the prayer that's inserted for rain. Most siddurim have chalaim ra'im v'kashim, u'mora'ot ra'ot v'kashot. So now, in modern Hebrew, mora'ot is lashon zachar, and it would be mora'ot ra'im v'kashim as well. But if you look in the Torah, who quotes it from the Ge'unim, in the lashon of the Rishonim, mora'ot, because ma'ora, even though today we spell with an ayin at the end, there they, because they had the a sound at the end with the hey, they used it as nekeva. And so the ma'orot ra'ot v'kashot comes from the language of the Torah, who's quoting the Ge'unim. So again, even though in modern Hebrew it would be ra'im v'kashim, in the Rishonim's Hebrew it would have been nekeva. You find that these differences appear that even though today certain things are zachar nekeva, the Gemara or the Rishonim don't necessarily always follow the same grammatical rules that we have today. So Amar Rav Chanina Breid Ravika, so this we just saw more recently in Masechet Makot, which is Shipud Shvachot V'Gumot Rav Malkio. Again, they're remembering things by heart. They're trying to remember the Shematata, who's the author of the Shematata. So over here he says, these three instances are Rav Malkio, Blorit, which is our case over here, Efer Makle, Ugvina, Rav Malkia. So how do you distinguish between Malkia and Malkio, which are very close in names? So he gives you the three that are connected to Rav Malkio, and the three that are connected to Rav Malkia. Shipud is in the Gemara in Beitza. It is the spit upon which the meat is roasted. Is it muksa or not? And there we say that it is muksa, and you have to be shomto. You have to let it go or release it because it is muksa. You can't carry around the spit that the meat was roasted on. Shvachot is from the Mishnah in Ketubot, which says that a woman, no matter how much she brings into her dowry or how many shvachot she brings into the marriage, she's not allowed to be idle. She must be engaged in some sort of form of work because otherwise idleness leads to depression or other activities. V'gumot is from the Gemara in Nida that says that shtei sa'arot don't literally have to be sa'arot. They can even be the follicles where the hair comes out of. That's already an indication of shtei sa'arot. Blorit is our case over here. Efer makle is the case in Makot, that one is not allowed to put ashes onto a wound. even though it might be curative because it simulates the effect of ktovet kaka. It's like putting a tattoo or it leaves a certain amount of permanent marking on the skin. Ugvina is something that we'll see later in our Masechta, which is the explanation for why we don't eat their cheeses, which will come up in the Mishnah today, but the Gemara later on will actually go to explain why it is that Gvina Takum is problematic. He divides it up in this manner that Shiput Shpachot and Gumot are Rav Malkiyo, and Blurit, Efer Maklein Gvina are Rav Malkiya. Amar Papa, just to make it more confusing, Rav Papa has a different way of dividing it. Matnitin umatnita, when it comes to Mishnayot and Braitot, Rav Malkiya. Shmaitita, if it's an independent memoir, Rav Malkiyo. So what he says is that anything that's a comment on a Mishnah, that is Rav Malkiya. Whereas anything that is an independent statement, which has nothing to do or not correlated with the Mishnah or a Braita, those are all Malkiyo. Visimana, and the Siman, to remember that is Matnita Malkuto. That the Mishnah is the queen, whether that's because it rhymes, or because it's Lashon Nekeva, or that the Mishnah always governs, it's the highest authority. Whatever the reason is that there's a mnemonic to remember it is that Rav Malkiya is associated with the Matnita. My Benayu, what's the difference between Rav Papa's version of this and Rav Arba'ava? Ik Benayu Shpachot. Shpachot is connected to a Mishnah. I mentioned before it's a Mishnah in Ketubot. And therefore the comment is that the Halacha is like that Mishnah in Ketubot. And therefore, according to Rav Papa, that would be associated with Rav Malkiya. On the other hand, for Rav Arba'ava, he associated that with Rav Malkiyo. So that would be a nafkamina between them. But as Rashi notes over here, that if you look very carefully, the Hani Tzlach, Shiput, Efer Maklev Gumot, Shmaitata Ninu. Shiput, the one from Beitza, Efer Maklev from Makot, and Gumot from Nida are Shmaitata. And then the three that are attached to the Mishnah are Shpachot, Blurit, and Vina. Blurit's connected to our Mishnah over here about the hair cutting, or the Braita that we just brought over here. The Gvinot are going to be attached to the Mishnah we're going to see on the second half of today's Daf. And Shpachot is the one that we mentioned. But that means that there's not only one Nafkamina between them. The Gemara only here brought the Nafkamina of Shpachot. The way Rashi's laying it out, there's also a second Nafkamina, which is Efer Makleh. Efer Makleh, according to Rav Adar Ba'ava, was associated with Rav Malkiya. On the other hand, Rav Papa, who says Shmaitata are associated with Rav Malkiyo, then he would move Efer Makleh over to Rav Malkiyo instead of Rav Malkiya. Rashi over here claims that there are actually two Nafkaminot. The Gemara only brought one of the two Nafkaminot because in the end it's focused on Rav Papa and it's Simana Matnita Malkata, and therefore it's focused on Rav Malkiya in the position of Rav Papa. And that's what he says in the last line. V'aydenaki tamuda ikim inav shvachot. Lo nakat shvachot v'Efer Makleh. Amilta de Rav Malkiya, de etnach bei Rav Papa siman nakat. So it's dealing with the area that he brought the siman for Rav Papa, and that is what he's focused on. And that's why it led in this direction. If you go back to Rashi and Makot, and the Baal Tosfot and other places suggest that there is only one Nafkamina, and that it's only Shvachot, and that Efer Makleh, they claim, is connected to a Mishnah in some way. It's not directly, but indirectly connected to a Mishnah over there. And therefore they say there's only one nafkamina, not two nafkaminot, and that would turn out to be machloket as to whether, according to Rav Papa, if you move Shvachot over to Rav Malkiya, then you would have four with Rav Malkiya, two with Rav Malkiyo. If you flip Efer Makleh back in the other direction, then you would have three and three again. So that machloket as to whether it's four and two, or three and three for Rav Papa. Right now, we begin a Mishnah. It's a very long Mishnah, which will take us through a number of dapim through the dap. And like many other cases, we have a long Mishnah like this. A lot of the information is spread out later. They could have really broken down the Mishnah into pieces and put the pieces of the Mishnah where they discussed that topic. Nevertheless, the Mishnah is consolidated over here. And that is, Il Dvarim, Shalovdei Kochavim Asurim, Bisuran Isuran Aha. These are items that if a goy has, and he's giving it to you, selling it to you, you're utilizing it, not only is there a problem of eating it, there's also a problem of getting hana from it. Hayayin, wine, Vachometz, Shalovdei Kochavim, Shaya Mitzkilato Yayin. And vinegar, that is wine vinegar, that was originally in the hand of the goy, both of those are problematic because of stam yeinam. Stam yeinam is not only asur b'shtia, it is asur behana'a. Vinegar over here is specifying that it came from wine, though in general in those days that's where vinegar came from. It was wine vinegar, to differentiate whether the goy got the vinegar and bought it as vinegar. If the goy bought it as vinegar already, then you don't have to worry about it. So only if the goy had it as wine, and then it deteriorated or turned into vinegar, then you have to worry about the origins, that the wine that was originally there was used for nisuch hayayin, And that's what causes us to worry about the chometz. We'll see in the Gemara, and the Baal Tosafot will note it, but you have to differentiate between Yayin Nesech, which is clearly Asur Midoraita, that's Minat Torah. Yayin Nesech is Asur, because that's something that is a libation to the Avodah Zarah, to Krovet Avodah Zarah. That is explicitly Asur Minat Torah, and we'll bring the Psukim for that. Over here, we're speaking about Stam Yena. This is where their wine, where we don't know whether they did Yidisuch HaYayin or not. So the Chachamim were Gozer. This is an institution, Midrabanan, that Stam Yenam has the same status as Yayin Esech, which means it's Asur Ba'achila or Shtiyah, and Asur Ba'hana'ah. That's even though we have no idea whether they were Menasechet or not, we have suspicions that this was a common activity that they did, that they were Menasech LeYayin, and because of that, they were Oser any Yayin. There is an additional reason which is given in the Gemara, which is Mishom Chatnot, because of marriage. Which is that when you drink together, you eat together, then your children get married. There's a socialization that results from that. But what the Baal Tosafot point out, and this again we'll get to in the Gemara, if it was just about socialization, then we would only make it Asur Ba'achila. That's Gvinatakum, Patakum, those are only Asur Ba'achila, not Asur Ba'hana'ah. So you need the two items, which is that both, the fact that it's Asur Mishum Chatnot, which is that we're worried about intermarriage, that's the thing that makes it Asur Ba'achila. But the fact that it's patterned or connected to Yayin Nesech, which is a Din D'Oraita that involves Isur Hana'ah, so that generated not only an Isur Achila in the Stam Yena, but also generated an Isur Hana'ah. So between the Chatnot and the Yayin Nesech, which are the two issues that we're trying to deal with, Stam Yena ends up between those two, and therefore it's both Asur Ba'achila and Asur Ba'hana'ah. Becheres Hadriani, this was Hadrianic clay, which they used to, when they were traveling long distances with the army, they wanted to transport wine, but they wanted to transport it in a concentrated manner. So they used to take concentrated wine, they used to then knead it into the clay, and then make the clay. And then when they got to whatever location it was, they used to crumble the clay, and soak it in water, and then the wine would leach out of it, and then reconstitute it from the concentrated wine. So that, Cheres Hadriani, is Asur, because it contains real wine inside of it. It's not just tam of wine. It's actually concentrate of wine that is embedded in the walls of this kli cheres. Vorot lebuvivim. These are skins that have the heart taken out of them. It was a common practice to Avodah Zarah in that time that they used to remove the heart of the animal, mimakrib it to Avodah Zarah. Many of the Rishonim point out that they used to do it while the animal was still alive. So then, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel makes a distinction. Rabbi Shimon Omer, bizmacha kereshalo agul, if it's a circular cut, asur. Mashuch, if it's a slice, then mutar. Because indications of doing it while the skin is still on the animal, while the animal is still alive, is that you carve out a circle and then you take out the heart from that location. Versus if you're doing it post the death of the animal, where you're just trying to cut the hide, then you would just slice it, you wouldn't make such a circular cut into it. But he says that a circular cut in the hide is indicative that it was used for Avodah Zarah. A slice in it is not. Gutana Kama makes no distinction, but just says that any orot that have a cut near the heart is indicative that this was Tikrovet Avodah Zarah. Basar hanichnas lovodat kochavim mutar. Meat that has been taken into the Avodah Zarah is mutar. Now, it may not be mutar in Achtila, because it may not be kosher meat, but it might be mutar v'hana'ah, or if it's still in the kosher packaging, maybe it is kosher meat also to be fine. The reason being is that as Rashi notes over here, there's no hektesh la'avodah zarah. So even though he might be going in to sacrifice it or use it with the avodah zarah, nevertheless, the Gemara later on says, ain hektesh la'avodah zarah, and just because of his intent, it doesn't change the status of the item. It doesn't become tikrovet avodah zarah until he's actually is makrivit or he places it before the avodah zarah. But that means hayotze asur. The meat that is exiting the house of the Avodah Zarah is not only Asur Ba'achila, it's also Asur Ba'hana'ah, Mishmei Shehu Kizivchei Meitim. Because that's the status of Zivchei Meitim, which is anything that was Mukrav, the Avodah Zarah. And we'll see, they're quoting the Pasuk from Baal Peor, and we'll see later on in the Gemara, will bring that also to connect in the Yayin as to why the Yayin is Asur. Ha'ochim L'Tarput. You can see Rashi on Lamed Bet Amud Bet says L'Tarput is L'Vakesh Tavatam. They're entering in to get their desire to get their avodah zarah. Tosfot on Lamed Bet Amud Bet also brings a parish of Rabbi Eino Shemaya Mishum Tinofet Kamo Beta Torfa. Torfa is a pretty negative word, which either means filth or obscenity or some debauchery. That could be the meaning of the word tarput over here. Rishami perish lashon trafim. That Rishami says is lashon of idols. So he's going into the idol worship. Or Rishami has a girsa of the tarbut, which would then reference it to a specific type of celebration or a bodhazah celebration that was practiced in that time. So there's a question here whether hochim letarbut is just simply saying they're going to an idol worship. There is an alternate girsa here, not to tarbut, but another version of the word, which would indicate a practice of a bodhazah, which was some sort of celebration, the Avodah Zarah. That might be what they're referring to. Or it's a Lashon Sagi Nahor, which is it's a denigrating word towards the Avodah Zarah, and they're using either the real word Tarfut, which means Trafim, just idols, or Tarput, which means something filthy or debauchery or some obscenity that they're being involved with, and that's what Rashi brings on Lamed Bet, as well as the Bali Tosafot there. Asur Laseit Lateiti Mahen. Then you're not allowed to transact with them. Rabbaim mutarim. Those that are returning, you are allowed to interact or transact with them. So that goes back to the Mishnah in the first parak and does not belong over here. And that the Bali Tosafot already say on Lamed Bet Amud Bet. Tanina v'matnita v'hifsik b'emsa dvarim b'hana'a mishum the dummy the basar nichnas. So we enter this thing in the middle, not because this is relevant to our Mishnah, it's relevant to the first parak. But since it has the same din or a similar din between entering and exiting, so therefore it brought in this Mishnah contextually because of that, but it's not necessarily connected over here. And that is that when they're going into the Avodah Zarah, you can't transact with them because they're going to give thanks to the Avodah Zarah. Or because of the problem of the Fnei Iver Lo Titen Mikshol, that they're going to use whatever you sell them towards the Krovet Avodah Zarah. So either of those reasons we already discussed in the first parak, you'd be asur to transact with them on their way into this celebration. When they exit from the Avodah Zarah, it's fine because they're already done. Any tikrovet they left over there, and whatever you're transacting with is fine now. Nodoto deku chavim v'kan kanayim. Now we're back on track, which is the flasks of the odeku chavim and their barrels or their pitchers. Now they store wine in these nodot are leather flasks, and kankanehem are ceramic or clay pitchers or barrels. If yain Yisrael kanuspem, if Jews put wine to store in them, asurim, the wine is asur, v'isurani sur hana'ad tibrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that the tam that leaches out of the walls of the flasks or the barrels then flavors the wine of the Jew, and that makes it asur, but not only asur b'shtia, asur b'hana'a. But komim arim, in isuran isur hana'a. Does not create an isur hana'a, it creates an isur shtia. And here they differentiate between this and the case of the Heres Hadriani. Because in the Heres Hadriani, the concentrated wine was be'en. It really existed there. Over here, you're just talking about flavor, you're not talking about real wine that is there. And for that reason, the Chachamim here say it's only Isur Shtia, not an Isur Hana'a, as opposed to over there where they agreed that the Heres Hadriani is also Isur Hana'a. Hacharzanim vazagim shel ovdei kochavim. The sediment, the pits, and the skins of the grapes from the wine of the ovdei kochavim, asurim, Isuran Isur Hana'a. Not only is it Asur v'Hashtia, it's Asur v'Hana'a, Divrei Rabbi Meir again. Chamim omrim, lachin asurim. If they are moist still, then they're asur ve'hana'a. If yeshim, Mar will tell us it's a period of time, 12 months. If they're dried out already, then they are mutarin, legamre. Hamorius, which is fish brine, ugvinat beit onyiki, and the cheeses that came from beit onyiki, shovdei kochavim, they belong to ovdei kochavim, and they are asurim. Ve'isran, isur hana'a, divrei Rabbi Meir. And the restriction is a restriction of hana'a, according to Rabbi Meir. So Morius is fish brine, and they used to put wine into the fish brine in order to offset the saltiness of the fish, to temper the fish, they used to put wine into it. We know that from the Gemara on the Mishnayot in Brachot with regards to eating bread in order to offset the saltiness of the fish. It's the only instance where bread can be tafel to something else. You make a shahako on the fish, even though you're eating bread, because the bread's there just to mitigate the saltiness of the fish, not for the bread in of itself. So the same thing over here. The morius over here, the wine is put in there not because of the flavor of the wine. It's just there to offset the saltiness of the fish, or others say to take out the zumama that's in there. It removes the zuma, or it attaches, or it takes away, whether it's the foul odor, or the icky stuff that's in there, that the wine takes care of. So the wine is not being used because of the wine. It's being used just as a ingredient to help out the situation. So Rabbi Meir thinks that because it's Yayin, that can be the same problem as Stam Yeinam, and therefore it's a Sur V'Yisra'ana. Chamim say the taste of the wine is not apparent in the item, and therefore even though there is wine in there, since it's not apparent, we'll make it Asur B'Shtiyah, but not Asur V'Hana'ah. Now with regards to Beit Onyige, again, the Gemara is going to deal with this more extensively, but just to be able to understand this, the problem that we're speaking about here, and to become more apparent later in the Gemara, is that the way that you coagulate cheese, or you curdle cheese, is by putting it into rennet. Rennet, which is the juices or acids of the stomach that cause the milk to curdle. So they used to take that from animals that were shechted. The question is, what type of animal is being used? Again, that'll be get discussed later on. What Rabbi Meir points out is that the robe of the agalim, the robe of the calves that were found in the city of Beit Onyage, were mukrav l'avodah zarah. They were sacrificed to avodah zarah. And that means that you're using the rennet of avodah zarah to curdle the cheese. And we have a principle that the ma'amid, something that causes something to become what it is, the ma'amid, that object makes it asur, even though it's less than the amount that would flavor it. So even though the rennet does not flavor the cheese, nevertheless, since it's the cause of the curdling, it takes on an important status, and therefore if it is of avodah zarah, it would be problematic, and even the chachamim would agree to that. That if you take the rennet of avodah zarah and use it to curdle the cheese would be problematic. What the chachamim say is, you're right, that the majority of agalim in the city are for avodah zarah, but if you take it in the context of the animals in the city, it's still a minority of the animals that are found in the city. And this goes to a shita of Rabbi Meir, which again, we'll see this all in the Gemara, just because the Mishnah is all consolidated over here, we're not going to get to it for a couple of dapim, that Rabbi Meir is chayish l'miut. Rabbi Meir always worries about a minority. He's chosheish for a miut. Not something that is improbable, but something that is a significant enough minority that we worry about it. So Rabbi Meir worries about this minority in the totality of animals, which is the majority of calves. He worries about that and says that the cheeses from there have a din like takrobet avodah zarah, and they're asur b'achila and asur b'ana. The Chachamim say, if you look in the context of the total behemoth in the city, it's a minority. It's a minority, we're not choshesh l'miut. And yes, it's asur b'achila because it could be from there. We can't trust it that it's not, but it's not going to be asur b'ana'a. Now, this Beit Onyage seems to be, it was unique to the city. It is not something that was generally true in all cities of non-Jews, but uniquely associated with this city that has this practice of avodah zarah. And there is a city that was a Greek city, Beit Onyage, that was famous for its cheeses, where there was a ton of avodah zarah that was practiced there. It must have been part and parcel of how they made the cheeses. They also used the calves towards avodah zarah in order to have their cheeses come out well. So there was such a concept right now. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Shaal Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yoshua. Shmuel asked Rabbi Yoshua, "Kshem ha'olchem b'derech," and they're walking together. Amar lo mipnei ma'asru givinot of the chachamim. Why did the chachamim decree that cheeses of non-Jews are not kosher or problematic? Because they curdle it in the rennet of a animal that is a nevela. And so therefore the rennet that's inside of it is part and parcel of the nevela. And because it's considered or classified as a nevela, then that is the ma'amid for the cheese. And that makes cheese is now affected by the nevela. So seemingly this doesn't have any connection to the previous Gemara. But Rash, the Mishnah, and more extensively on Lamed Daled Amud Bet, says that the question here is, they're asking according to the Rabbonon. According to the Rabbonon, say that it's asur b'achila, but not b'hana'a, and they don't connect it to takrobet avodah zarah, then why is there any issue or reason to worry about these cheeses that are made by the non-Jews? Can't worry about non-kosher milk, because it doesn't curdle. And therefore, what's the problem over here? And therefore, he sees it as a continuation of the previous makhluk between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim with regards to the cheeses of Beit Onyage. Now, the rennet of an avela is problematic because it has the status, or the skin that is around the stomach has the status of nevela, and that skin around the nevela then is the ma'amid for the milk to curdle into cheese. And the ma'amid takes on a super status. And so even though it's imparting no flavor into the cheese, nevertheless, as the ma'amid, it makes it asur. As opposed to when you have a kosher animal, even though the lining of the stomach would be considered to be basar, then now you're using basar as the ma'amid for the milk, to curdle the milk into cheese. Nevertheless, each item inherently is mutar. The milk itself is milk of heter, and the lining is basar, that is basar of heter. And since the basar itself imparts no flavor into the cheese, then you don't have basar v'chalav. Basar and chalav independently are both mutarim. So the basar as a mamid isn't a problem for the chalav, for the milk, because it's imparting no flavor, and it itself is inherently mutar. And that'll be the difference between using a kebat nevela as the mamid versus using the keba of a kosher animal as the mamid, where that might have been basar v'chalav. By nevela, it's a surah. By the basar v'chalav, it's mutar. But the only problem here is the mamid and not the flavor that is imparted. And by basar v'chalav, the basar is mutar, so the mamid is an item that is mutar. And the nevela, the mamid is a davar isor, and therefore the mamid is problematic in its contribution towards the curdling of the milk to make the cheese. Amar lo, Rabbi Shmuel responds to Rabbi Yeshua and says, Halo kebat ola chamura mi kebat nevela. Is it the stomach of a ola, korban ola, which is not only a surbana, but it's a sorbim mi'ila? You're not allowed to use the korban ola. There's an isra ana, but it's also an isra mi'ila. If you misappropriate anything from hektesh, then you have to bring a korban mi'ila. You're stealing from God. There it's much more chamor, and nevertheless, v'amru, kohen shedato yafeh, a kohen who, this is lashon sagi nohor, who is not so particular, sorfa chaya. He's allowed to chug it raw, which means that if he takes the stomach of the ola, the perish, the acid or the undigested items that are in the stomach of the ola, he can tilt it up and take it right down. He can chug that down. So that shows you that the liquid that is found inside the stomach is not classified like the animal itself. It's seen as either perish ba'alma, it's seen as refuse or stuff to dispel, or it's considered as being totally separate from the animal and not consecrated along with the animal. If that's the case by an ola, then certainly by a nevela, whatever's in the stomach of the animal should not have the status of a nevela. Velo hodulo, by a Tosafot say it later on. This seems to be insertion in the Mishnah, either just as a sidebar and a side note here by Rabbi Yeshua, or it was added in later on by Rabbi Yehuda Nasi just to respond to this statement of Rabbi Shmuel. Aval amru, they don't agree with what Rabbi Shmuel says over here. Einanim velo moalim. There's an Easter midrabanan to chug the perish that's in the stomach of an ola. So yes, einanim. You're not allowed to get ana, which is a takanat chachamim. Velo moalim says that it's not doraita, because if it was doraita, it would be an Easter mi'ila. So it means there is an Easter midrabanan. Rabbi Shmuel thought it was completely mutar. Here you see that the Mishnah brings a dissenting opinion. It says that it was asur midrabanan. Despite that fact, Rabbi Shmuel's question is still a fair question. If it is a sur midrabanan, that still means that midoraita, it's totally mutar. And that means that the rennet that's found in the nevela should have been mutar to curdle the milk with it. Amar lo, so then he gives him another answer. Mipnei, shemamina nota bekebat egle ovudat kochavim. It's because they use the keba, the rennet of the calves of a tikrovet of avodah zarah to curdle the milk. And that's why it's a sur. So this speaks similar to what Rabbi Meir said before, that they're curdling the milk to make it into cheese in the stomachs of the Avodah Zarah. And by Avodah Zarah, there's no dispensation, because by Avodah Zarah it says, Lo idbak biyadcha mi'uma min acherem. You're not allowed to take anything from the cherem, meaning that not even a drop that's associated with Avodah Zarah. And Rashi over here says, Gabei Avodah Kochavim afilu perish asur, the nechale benefche, shirei yafeh. He wants the animal to look bigger and fatter, because that looks like he's presenting to the god or the Avodah Zarah a bigger animal. So even the perish in the stomach, which gives it heft or weight, is used in the tikrovet in sense of Avodah Zarah. And others just say, Avodah Zarah has a high standard where you're not allowed to take anything that's associated with it whatsoever. So then why is it only asur bishtiyah? If it's really because the ma'amid was from Avodah Zarah, then it should not only be asur be'achila or shtia, it should be asur be'hana. And yet the takanat chachamim by the cheeses of the old day kuchavim was only in eating the cheeses. It was not an isur hana'a. And the Baal Tosfot point out on Lamed Aleph Amud Bet that it seems from here that it's pretty clear that Rabbi Yeshua is just trying to push away Rabbi Shmuel Because Rabbi Yeshua is not choshesh the miut, and even Rabbi Meir, who is choshesh the miut, was only choshesh for that miut in Beit Onyeki. He wasn't choshesh for that in every place. And so then, saying that it came from Kebat Avodah Zarah would not be a sufficient reason for them to put a takana in place. Hisio l'dvar acher, the Bali of Tosafot on Lamed Daled Amud Bet, say they're not sure whether the word should be pronounced hisio or hisio. Hisio means lahasi, carry him over. That he changed the topic, got him and carried him over. Hishio is like by Chava, where she says, Hishiani ha-Nachash. The Nachash was the one who convinced me or pushed me. He's the one who tempted me to do this. So also here, Hishiani would be Hishio, that he cajoled or tempted him to move over to another topic, because he didn't want to answer the question. The Gemara later on will tell us, that's because it was a new Takanat Chachamim, new Gzerat Chachamim. And the policy was that for the first 12 months, they did not disclose the reason for the takanah or the gzeirah. That was so that people didn't question the takanah or the gzeirah. They let it go into effect. Once it was in effect, then they explained the reason behind the gzeirah. The assumption was that most people would defer to the reasoning of the chachamim and assume that they looked into it well, spend a lot of time deciding this, and once they decided, then we're going to accept what they decided. Later on, when they disclosed the reason, 12 months later, it would already be in effect, and then people wouldn't question it. The problem is that if people up front have the reason, they might start to fight against the reason or strive to outthink the reason, and then the gzera will never take hold. So he didn't want to disclose the reason to Rabbi Yishmael that they had instituted this, and therefore he gives him reasons that are not real reasons, as Rabbi Yishmael clearly is pointing out, that using it from the Nevelah or using it for the Oda Kuchavim would have resulted in different answers. One is that it would be Mutar the Gamri, and the other one it would be Asur Ba'ana'a. So that can't be the explanation. There must be an alternative explanation, but Rabbi Yeshua is not willing to disclose it. So he takes him off track and asks him a different question in order to change the topic. Amar lo Yishmael, heich ata korea. How do you read the pasuk in Shir HaShirim? In the beginning of Shir HaShirim, it says, Yishakeni minishikot pihu, ki dovim dodecha miyayin, the reyach shmanecha tovim, shemen turak shemecha, ankein alomot evucha. The question that he's asking him is about the word dodecha. If you don't have punctuation, you could read the word dodecha as being dodecha, which would be in the male conjugation, or you can read the word dodayich, which would be the female conjugation. And the question he's asking him is, how do you pronounce it? Do you pronounce it as dodecha, or do you pronounce it as dodayich? The nafka mina, as Rashi notes over here, is who's speaking in the pasuk. Because in Shir HaShirim, Bnei Yisrael are the nekeva, and Hashem is the zachar, in the allegorical sense of Shir HaShirim. So if it is ki dovim dodayich miyayin, that means that it's Hashem speaking about Bnei Yisrael. If you say it's ki dovim dodecha miyayin, that means that it is Bnei Yisrael speaking about Hashem. Which one is it? Which is the way to pronounce it? And that's what he's asking him over here. Eich ata korea ki dovim dodecha miyayin. Do you read it as ki dovim dodecha miyayin o ki dovim dodayich? Which way do you read it? Amalo ki dovim dodayich. He says, I read it in the female form. Amalo in a davar kein. That's the wrong reading of it. Sharei chaviro melameid alav. The next pasuk teaches you the answer to that, which is the reach shmanecha tovim. So the fact that the next pasuk says the reach shmanecha tovim shows you that it must be a male conjugation. And that, Tosfot Alamed Daled Amud Bet, tells you that that's because of the proof from the end of the pasuk. Latter part of the pasuk, Alkein Alamot Aivucha. Reach Shmanecha, you could have said the same thing. Is it Shmanecha or Shmanayach? But the end of that pasuk says, Alkein Alamot Aivucha. Therefore, the young maidens loved you. So that must be Knesset Yisrael speaking about the Kodesh Baruch Hu, because Alamot Aivucha means that the young maidens are loving you, which would be the male, which would be a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And therefore, it has to be L'Reach Shmanecha Tovim, that the aroma or the fragrance of your oil is great, and that is Bnei Yisrael speaking about a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So he says, using that, you would have to say the same thing about the previous pasuk, which is Yishakeni Minishikot Piyo, Hashem should give me the kisses of his mouth, Ki Tovim Dodecha Miyayin, because your love is greater than wine. And that's Bnei Yisrael speaking to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. What Rabbi Yishmael thought was that the way to interpret the pasuk, and Rashi brings that over here, is that V'hochi kamara Knesset Yisrael Yishakenu Kodesh Baruch Hu min Shikopiu Kikach Amarli Tovim Dodayich Miyayin. The first part of the pasuk is clearly about a Kodesh Baruch Hu, because it's in Shakeni Minishkot Pihu. So that is clearly from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's been a Knesset Israel speaking and saying that I want the kisses of Hashem. But why do I want the kisses of Hashem? Ki kach amar li. Because this is what Hashem declared, Tovim Dodayech Meyayin. My Knesset Israel is more beloved to me than wine. So those are the two ways to read it. Are they saying we want the kiss from HaKadosh Baruch Hu because your kisses are greater than wine? That's Dovim Dodecha in the male form. Or are they saying we want your kisses Hashem because you've declared about us that Tovim Dodayech Meyayin, that we are more beloved to you, or we are so precious to you more than the wine? And so Rabbi Shmuel said it was Dodayech, whereas Rabbi Yoshua said it was Dodecha, and his proof is from the next pasuk, which is the Reach Shmanecha Tovim. So if you use the parallel between the two psukim, it would indicate that it should be a male conjugation in both, and that's all governed by the last part of the second pasuk, which is Alkein Alamot Eivucha, which makes it clear that it's Knesset Israel that is speaking and saying that's why we love you so much, or that's why the Alamot love you so much. And embedded in this is a hint to Rabbi Yoshua, which the Gemara Darshan, which says, Ki tovim dodecha miyayin yeino shel Torah. Dodecha refers to the Talmidei Chachamim. And what the pasuk means is, Ki tovim dodecha. The words of the Chachamim are more beloved to you than yayin yeina shel Torah. And that's what we find many places where the Gemara says, the Mishnah brought the Din D'Rabbanan before the Din D'Oraita. Ki tovim dodecha miyayin. And its hint to Rabbi Yishmael was that the words of the Chachamim are more precious than the words of the Torah, and that you have to trust in the Chachamim. Even though he moved him on to a new topic to take him away from asking the question, even in that new topic, he hinted to him that he needs to trust in the Chachamim and give deference to the Chachamim. Right? Yayin minolan. How do we know that Yayin is asur? The Baal Tosafot right away asks, what is the question over here? The question is not about Yayin Nesech. Yayin Nesach is not mentioned in our Mishnah at all. So what's the Gemara asking over here? Yayin Minolon. Our Mishnah is talking about Stam Yenam, which is a Gzeira Derabonon. And here the Gemara is asking for a Pasuk Min HaTorah. So that goes back to what I explained to you in the Mishnah, that the Stam Yenam, the Gzeira of Stam Yenam, sits on top of Yayin Nesach, and that's why they want to know, where's the derivation of Yayin Nesach Min HaTorah? Given that, that's why there's an Isra Anah by Stam Yenam. Yayin Minolon, Amar Rabba Barbu, Amar Krah, Asher chelev zvachemo yochelu, that they will eat the fats of those korbanot that are brought to Avodah Zarah, ishtu yein nisicham, and they will drink the wines of their libation. Ma zevach asur ba'na'a, just like a zevach, to grow it Avodah Zarah is asur ba'na'a, af yayin amu asur ba'na'a. So the wine is asur ba'na'a, the hekesh in the pasuk between zevach and Yayin teaches you that the status of Zevach and Yayin are the same. Now, even though Yayin is also Tikrovet Avodah Zarah, and so why isn't it just a Surmi Tikrovet Avodah Zarah? By Tosafot note over here that you have to distinguish between Nisuch and Zvicha, and that they're two different areas of Halacha, and even though they're both Tikrovet Avodah Zarah, what's true of one is not always true of the other, and you need the Hekesh to bring it from Zvicha to Nisuch, even though Nisuch is a form of Tikrovet Avodah Zarah. And even though, as the Baal Tosafot point out, there are Tanaim that believe that these psukim in Azinu are speaking about Bnei Yisrael and not the Ovdei Kochavim, nevertheless, this point is still made, which is there is a hekesh between Zevach and Nesech, and they do their Avodah Zarah kedome lipnim mishel Bnei Yisrael. And so if there's a hekesh here between Yayin and Zevach, that same hekesh will exist for Avodah Zarah as well. But then Zevach Kufei Minalan. How do you know that a Zevach itself is restricted? So this is what we quoted in the Mishnah, that Zibchei Meitim, or that's what Rabbi Yekiva quoted, that Takrovet Avodah Zarah is the status of Zibchei Meitim, is like a sacrifice of the dead, and therefore is Asur. Ma Meit Asur Bana. Just like one is not allowed to get benefit from the deceased. Av Zevach Nami Asur Bana. So too, Takrovet Avodah Zarah is also a surbana. And even though this is a pasuk from Tehillim, and this isur should have existed pre-Tehillim, the note here on the side of the Masorah Shas brings you the similar concept that the Gemara uses by issues that are for the Kohanim that come out of Yechezkel, which is that there was an oral Misorah until that point in time. Va'atal Yechezkel, and Yechezkel came and wrote it down. Similarly over here, there was an oral tradition about what was the status of Takrovet Avodah Zarah. V'ata David asked Michay Akra. And David came along and wrote it down in a pasuk in Tehillim, so that Mesorah would be then committed to the Tehillim. Umeid Gufei Minolan. How do you know that a mate is a Surbana? Acha Sham Sham Me'eglarufa. Gzer Shavah from Eglarufa. Tivacha, it says, by Miriam, Vatamat Sham Miriam, the beginning of Parshat Chukat, Uchte Vatam, and then it's written over there by the Eglarufa, Varfu Sham Etaigla Banacha. So the Gzer Shavah of Sham Sham, Ma Halahalan Asurbana, just like by Eglarufa, it's a Surbana. Afka Nami Asurbana. So too by the mate is a Surbana. So a mate is a Surbana. The Krovet Avodah Zarah is called Zivchei Meitim, so it has an Isser like the mate or Isser Anah. And Yain is Hukash, the Zivchei Meitim, and that's how we know Yain Nesach has an Isser Anah. V'hotam Inolan, how do you know the Egla Rufa is a Surba Anah? Amrei Debei Rabbi Yanai, Kapara Ktiv Ba Kikodoshim. It has the word Kapara written in it. It says, Kaper La'amcho Yisrael, Asher Padita. That's the beginning of the Psukim, La Egla Rufa. And therefore, the Kaper or Kapara is like Kodoshim. Just like Kodeshim Asur Bahana'a, so too the Egla Rufa is Asura Bahana'a. And the Baal Tosfot point out that the Gemara has a different limud, where it says, Be'arfu Sham, Sham Tehei Kvurata. And that the Sham teaches you that it's Asur Bahana'a, and not the connection to Kodeshim. The Baal Tosfot say, why do you need both limudim? They say, because if it was just a derivation of Kodeshim, the din by Kodeshim is that there's only an Isur Anah or Isur Mi'ilah, until the mitzvah is done. Once you complete the mitzvah of Kodeshim, there's no longer an Isur Hana'a. So it's over here. You would have thought after the Egla Rufa is killed, then there's no Isur Hana'a because its mitzvah has been done. That's why you need the word Sham. Sham Teik Vurata. Arfu Sham, where it was killed, that's where it's going to remain. And if you only had the word Sham, then you would have thought it's only applicable after the animal was killed. Beforehand, how do you know it's Asur Bahana'a? That comes from Kodoshim. So the combination of the two tells you it's Asur Bahana'a before it's killed, once it's designated as an Egla Rufa. And the other one tells you after it's killed that it's still Asur Bahana'a. So that Isur Hana'a now is transposed onto mate. That from mate, it goes to Zivchei Meitim. And from Zivchei Meitim to Yayin Nesach, and that's how we know Yayin Nesach is Asur Bahana'a. Achomet Shalom Dei Kuchavim Sheam Mitchilato Yayin. Vinegar that was originally wine. Pshita. Mishom de achmitz pokalei yisurei. Why would you think otherwise? If it started as wine and turns into chometz vinegar, that somehow removes the isur hana'a that existed beforehand. Ravashi ha'atole yishmu'inan comes to teach you chometz shalanu. B'yod ovdei kohavim. Ein tzarich chotam b'to chotam. Our vinegar in the hands of a goy does not need a double seal. It only needs a single seal for kashrut. If you're worried about nisucha yayin, lo menasche. Nobody uses vinegar for a wine libation. If you're worried about him swapping it out and changing your good vinegar for his bad vinegar, since he already has a seal on it, he's not going to go through all the trouble in order to forge the seal to swap it out. So what we'll see later on in the Gemara is there is a requirement when it comes to meats and wine, that there be a double seal on the item, because there's more incentive for him to break the seal and use it, because there he's religiously motivated. He wants the wine, he wants to switch the meat out for non-kosher meat. There he's religiously motivated. When he's religiously motivated, we worry about one seal, because there he'll take the trouble to break the seal. So there you need a double seal. Over here, where there's no religious motivation because it's chometz and not yayin, and there's already a seal on it, which is enough trouble to forge, there you don't need a double seal for the chometz. So the truth is, and Baal HaTos will point this out, that hu adin, tabamatz lememer, dashmunin, davka shel yisur, shnit nafsech v'odo yayin. Avol shel yisrael mutar, delav bar nisuchu. It could have been to tell you the din, that the Jewish wine that turned into vinegar, if it's given to the goy, and the goy then sells it to someone else, that's not a problem. It's only had to be the goy's wine up front in order to be an issue. So that's the nafka mirai, not about the chotam. What the Baal HaTos would say is, chado noko teshmina meitarte. It's one thing that teaches you the same thing, which is that chometz of a Jew is not a problem in the hands of the goy. That has two implications. One is, there's no problem with stam yenam with regards to that chometz. And number two is, you only need a single seal on that chometz because it's not yayin. It says it's not yayin, and they're not makrivit, they're not menasechet, that it doesn't need a double seal on it. So he says, the truth is that they are giving that answer, and they're packaged together as a single answer, which is, you don't need a seal because of the reasoning, which is that the Jews' wine that became chometz is no longer subject to stam yenam. Right, then, the Bali Tosafot say from this, Mikana yar nira, latir chometz shalanu b'maga oveid kochavim. Sounds from this that non-Jews can touch the vinegar. Our wine vinegar, if they didn't touch it when it was wine, but now it's vinegar, they should be able to touch it. What's the fear by stam yenam? That he's going to renasech, the libation. Chometz, there's no libation. So why is there a fear of him touching our chometz? Begam Rabbeinu Meshulam hetiru. Rabbeinu Meshulam paskin leheter, that a goy who touches the vinegar does not ruin the vinegar. Rabbeinu tamik pit alav, v'mar ki enanu bikim b'tiv chometz. He said, it's not true. He says, we don't know when it's wine and when it's vinegar. And he proves it from the Gemara in Baba Batra, where the Gemara in Baba Batra discusses when something smells like vinegar, but tastes like wine, or it tastes like vinegar but smells like wine. What's the status of that item? Is that vinegar or is that wine? So he says that there in the Gemara they're already arguing whether it's vinegar or wine. How are we to know whether it's already vinegar or whether it's wine? And based on that, he says you can't allow them to touch the vinegar because you're not sure if it's really vinegar or maybe it still has the status of wine. And then he goes on to say, Begam ala boser, shetiru Rabbeinu Meshulam. Rabbeinu Meshulam says when they have unripened grapes, immature grapes that they squeezed into wine, that it used to be matir b'mago de kuchavim. He used to allow, if the obi kuchavim touched it, it would not spoil that wine. Mishum de mashiyotzi menu nikre mayim. What comes out of a boser is called water and not wine. And he proves it from Gemarot and other places that say a boser is mishal kenisa tamayim. It's when the liquid enters into the grape, but it calls it mayim, not yayim. So he says from that it has the status of water, not a status of wine. Again, hikpid rabbeinu tam. Rabbeinu Tam again disagrees with Rabbeinu Meshulam. Meshulam, deinanu bikim, matai kara yibotzer. We don't know where that threshold is when it's called a grape and when it's called a botzer. When is it immature and when is it mature? And he goes on to say, v'od katav, shana achat. They had 1 year in France. Loni pashulu hayenot. The wines never matured or the grapes never matured. V'shvil sheyenotem, enam mevushalot kol tzorchem. Hachinami nema shalin hagutah shana din yayin nesech. Because the wines that year didn't, I don't know if it was the grapes, didn't fully mature, or the wines didn't fully ferment, and therefore the wines that year were of an inferior quality, he's going to say because of that there's no yayin nesek that year, it doesn't make sense. We don't know where that threshold is between wine and water, and based on that, you can't rely on that to say that the goy can touch the boser. Alright, so that's two things that the Rabbeinu Tam argued on the Rabbeinu Meshulam, which are a derivative of what we're speaking about over here, which is the chometz, where they don't makrib the chometz. Rabbeinu Tam theoretically agrees, or fundamentally agrees with the Rabbeinu Meshulam. He just says, we don't know. But the difference between boser and mayim and chometz and yayin. Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yuloh, Shaninu yayin mibushal, shalov deku chavim, sheyam mitchilato yayin asur. Wine that is cooked wine, boiled wine, of a goy, is still problematic because it originally was in its raw state as wine. And therefore, it was originally stam yenam that made it asur. And now when it's mivushal, it doesn't change anything. Pshita, mishum de'ifshel pakele yitzura. The same question we asked on our Mishnah. Just because it went bad, spoiled, and became vinegar, the isra not disappear. Over here, just because you now boiled the wine, doesn't mean that the isra hana went away. So Rabashi, yata lishminan, yayim mivushal shalanu b'yado v'kovim, en tzarei chotam b'tol chotam. The same thing that Ravashi said about our Mishnah, he's saying about the statement of Rabbi Law, which is that wine that is boiled only requires one seal, does not require two seals on it. If you're worried about Yisukhayayin, that's no longer an issue. If you're worried about them exchanging it out, since there's a single seal on it, they're not going to go through all the trouble to break the seal and swap out the wine. So this is what's otherwise known as that yayin mibushal. When it comes to cooked wines or boiled wines, they are not subject to the problem of stam yenam. But that's only if a Jewish wine that was boiled. If it was not Jewish wine, then it's boiled. Doesn't solve the problem. It was stam yenam before it became boiled. Therefore, it's a problem. But the Jewish wine that is mibushal is not subject to maga ovei kochavim. You still have a separate issue, which is that they could swap out the wine. If they swap out the wine, that you can solve by a chutam, with some seal on it, or if the bottle is closed, that is fine. Once the bottle's open, then you have that risk. But today, where the bottles are labeled, and it's much harder to swap out the wine, I think it's much less of an issue in those situations. But you see here the same din with regards to Yain Mibushal as you saw with regards to Chometz. Even though it's disqualified from going to the Mizbeach, it was once qualified. And therefore the Isra now remains, unless it started out as a Jew's wine, and then you can have it be Chometz and Yain Mibushal, and not be a problem for the Maga of the Oved Kochavim. And tomorrow we'll speak more extensively about Yain Mibushal and pasteurization, as to whether pasteurization counts as Yain Mibushal. Okay, we're going to stop here. Two lines down on the top of Lamed Amud Aleph.